We're in the book of Genesis, chapter number 27, and we're telling the story of Jacob receiving, by deception, the blessing of Abraham and the blessing of the firstborn of Isaac. And so I want us to start at verse 26, where Isaac has finally been convinced enough by the deception that he goes ahead and gives the blessing to Jacob, who is only a few seconds younger than the firstborn Esau. Now, we know that this was prophesied ahead of time. It would happen this way. I think that mom jumped the gun when she tried to help God out and promoted this deception that we see Jacob carrying out. I don't know how God would have made sure that Jacob received the blessing, but that would have been taken care of, I'm positive. This is the blessing itself. Genesis 27, 26. Then his father, Yitzhak, or Isaac, said to him, "Come near, kiss me, my son." So he came near and he kissed him. And Yitzhak smelled the smell of his garments. Remember, mom had made him wear some of Esau's clothing that she had at her place. And then he blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that he who is has blessed." And then comes the blessing proper. And listen to some of the words, because it plays into some things that Yitzhak will say to Esau in a little bit. "May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine." So the blessings of the land are being given to him, the blessings of agriculture, the blessings of produce. Verse 29, "Let peoples serve you, and nations," or ethnic groups, "bow down to you." So that would be the idea that the Abrahamic seed is going to be attended to by lots of different ethnic groups. It's phrased this way in another part of the blessing. "In your seed, Abraham, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed." Now, we know from Galatians chapter 3 that the ultimate fulfillment of that is Jesus, where every knee shall bow and all these different ethnic groups and tongues and people groups are praising him and worshiping him. But for the Israeli blessing line, they are going to be the head and not the tail much of their history. Then, very specific, in middle of verse 29, "Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you." Now that has the idea that he is going to be the head of the tent city, and eventually the settled community. He is going to be the patriarch once Yitzhak has passed on. And then the Abrahamic blessing in its most basic form is repeated. "Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you." So that's the wording of the blessing placed on Jacob. And it won't matter in the long run that Isaac, thought that he was blessing Esau. Doesn't matter that Jacob was actually perpetrating a hoax or a deception here at his mother's lead. Once the words are spoken, they are not retrievable. Verse 30. "As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Yitzhak his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting." So he shot whatever it is he needed to shoot, And so now he's back in the encampment. He's ready to start preparing it. So it's going to be a little bit longer yet, a couple more hours before Yitzhak gets that meal brought to him by his eldest son, by a few seconds, Esau. Verse number 31, he also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And then he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" Remember, Yitzhak, Isaac cannot see. There is something going on with his eyes, probably cataracts, where he is, for all practical purposes, blind. "So who are you?" And he answered, said, "I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Yitzhak trembled very violently. Now, I think part of his physical reaction here is because he sensed that something was not quite right earlier. Remember, he said, who are you? "Well, I'm Esau. You sound more like Jacob." Remember all of that? And that's why he had him come close, but mom had already anticipated that, and so she'd put goat skin on the nape of his neck and maybe even around the front of his throat, and then little gloves up his forearm from his palms, maybe even adhered it with a little bit of basic adhesive, so that whenever Yitzhak reached out and touched him on this the only exposed part of the skin during this contact, that he would have felt the hairiness. And so that's why Yitzhak had him come closer, because he wanted to feel him. And he felt like Esau. He still sounded like Jacob. And then he got him close enough to smell the clothing. And that's the thing that put him over the top. But he was hesitant through the whole thing. And now, suddenly, it's occurring to him, I was duped. I was fooled, like I thought I might have been. So Yitzhak trembled very violently, and he said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate it all before you came, and I blessed him?" Now, he almost certainly knows it's got to be Jacob. That's who he suspected at the very beginning. And who else would have gained in this idea of the birthright? And then he says the thing that is hard for us to comprehend in our society. Because in our society, we believe that if you've been duped, then that should be reversible. Well, that's not the way it works in their culture, in their customs, in their society. So Yitzhak says, "Yes, and he shall be blessed." And as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. So this is the beginning of something that is referenced in the book of Hebrews that we're going to go to in a little bit. Esau hears his dad basically say, "This is irrevocable. I am not going to take back what has already been spoken in the name of God over Jacob. I thought he was you, but it doesn't matter." And he said, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." And he said, "Your brother came deceitfully. He's taken away your blessing." See, don't you understand? It's a done deal. He has not just simply the right of the firstborn. And again, remember, this is only by a few seconds that these two are separated. He will be the patriarch once I'm dead. And he will also receive the Abrahamic blessing of the seed. It is now upon him. Verse 36, Esau said, "Oh, is he not rightly named Yaakov?" Which means heel grabber, leg puller. And we talked about the idea that when he came out of the womb, he was literally holding on to his brother's ankle. And somehow this has either become or was already a euphemism, an idiomatic expression for someone that tries to deceive you. And we still kind of have an element of it today. I keep using the term leg puller. In our English American speaking society, when we say, oh, don't pull my leg, means don't try to trick me. Don't try to deceive me. And so that goes back, apparently, way back to the Hebrew of heel grabber. Is he not rightly named Yaakov, heel grabber? For he cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright. Now, here we have to be a little bit more precise. The cheating part definitely can be applied to what just happened. But you remember the birthright issue where Esau came in hungry from the field and bought a bowl of lentil stew, red lentil stew, by letting Jacob have the birthright. So that was transactional. Esau may think that he was cheated in that, but the reality is he didn't really care enough about the birthright at that time to not sell it so cheaply. And that's going to come back in a moment as well in the book of Hebrews. He's cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright. Behold, now he's taken away my blessing. Now, what's the distinction between the two? Well, the birthright happens by literally birth. The eldest son, unless he's disinherited, receives a double portion of the inheritance, meaning how many ever sons there are, it's divided up into that many divisions plus an additional division. And the eldest gets the double portion, and he becomes the patriarch. He becomes the head of the extended family. So that is distinct from the verbal blessing given by the father typically to the firstborn son, and in the case of the Abrahamic line, includes the Abrahamic blessing of the seed. So he's cheated me. He's taken away both things, the leadership of the family, the inheritance, the double portion inheritance, and he's also taken away my blessing from the line of Abraham, given by God, by the way. And then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Yitzhak answered and said to Esau, behold, I've made him lord over you, and all his brothers I've given to him for servants. Now, when it talks about brothers here, it means family members. The idea that, again, Jacob, rather than Esau, is going to be the head of the family, the patriarch. And everybody has to follow his leadership once Yitzhak is dead. So that's been given through the blessing to Jacob. It's irrevocable. And with grain and wine I sustained him. That's the blessing on the agriculture. What then can I do for you, my son? I mean, I gave him the whole thing, all of it, because I thought I was giving it to you. Esau said to his father, have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice, and he wept. Now that's the wording I was waiting for before shifting over to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter number 12 is encouraging the Hebrew readers, the Jewish believers that are reading this story, reading this book, to do things right, to be holy as God is holy, to stay with Jesus as their Savior, as their Lord, as their guide. And so when you get to verse 14 of chapter 12, he says this, strive for peace with everyone. So try to get along with everybody in society. And for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. So be holy as God is holy. That's the goal. Verse 15, see to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God. So make sure you hang in with the salvation, the grace that is through Jesus Christ, and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. So sometimes you have a problem of people not getting along and getting on each other's nerves and even working against one another. That's that root of bitterness. And I'm sure all of us have seen that do a lot of damage inside of families, inside of churches, inside of communities. Verse 16. Now, this is the tie-in. And that no one is sexually immoral, so not getting all carried away with multiple wives and relationships and playing around sexually, because God's plan from the beginning of creation was one man, one woman together for a lifetime. So make sure that no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau. Now, the word for unholy here is distinct from the word holiness that happened earlier. This word for unholy means to not be respectful of divine things, not appreciating the things of God. And that definitely applies to Esau. Because remember what he did earlier, which is mentioned right here, who sold his birthright for a single meal. So in the book of Genesis, it says that he showed disregard for his birthright by selling it cheaply for a single bowl of red lentil stew, because he didn't care about it. He didn't think it was all that important at that time. Verse 17, for you know that afterward, we don't know how long afterward, but probably quite a few years, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. So he couldn't change a choice that he had made earlier of not caring about the birthright and the blessing of God. And so eventually he reached that point of no return. It crossed the line where he could not get it back no matter how much he bawled. Let's go back to Genesis now. Genesis 27:39. So Esau is bawling, he's crying. And then Yitzhak, Isaac his father, answered and said to him, behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. So the blessing upon Jacob gave him the fatness of the land and gave him the moisture cycle, the dew of heaven that kept that agricultural land prosperous. So basically, Jacob ended up with the promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey, where Esau is going to end up with a property to the southeast of the Dead Sea, which is going to be scrubby, dry, and arid, a place that you have to really work hard at growing crops because of the lack of water. So you got to do a lot of irrigation in order to get your crops. It's just not blessed like the Holy Land is, like the Promised Land is. So that's how he ends up in the property he ends up with later. And then verse 40, by your sword you shall live. There will be a mercenary type of element to the Edomites. Since they live in a property that's not all that prosperous, they will take to taking things from other people or trying to serve as mercenaries, you know, to supplement their income. But then comes this, you shall serve your brother. What happens later is the Edomite nation becomes subservient for a period of time to the kingdom of Israel. They act as a, for a while, I think it's almost like an occupied territory of Israel. And then for a while, they are just a province of the growing Israeli kingdom. But then the prophecy continues here in verse 40. It says, but when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. After the split between southern Judah and northern Israel, eventually the kingdom of Moab declares their independence from Judah. And they will eventually become so spiteful and hateful to Judah that they will cheer on the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians in 587. And God will get after him about that in a couple of prophecies in the book of the 12. I think Nahum and Obadiah, if I'm remembering right, Obadiah for sure, talking about how Edom is going to come under the judgment of God. And for all practical purposes, they will be erased from history. This is the future story of the Edomites, who are the descendants of Esau. After they break free of Judah, they will eventually be run out of their original territory by Arabians, who are basically the children of Esau, or of Ishmael. They'll migrate to the west and settle in southern Judah. And eventually, one of the Maccabees, one of the grandnephews, I think it is, of Judas Maccabee, will forcibly annex that section called Idumea, where these Edomites were living, into his Hasmonean kingdom, and basically tell him, you have to become Jewish or die or leave. And so pretty much by the time the first century, second century of the Christian era comes by, the Edomites have disappeared from history because they've either been absorbed into Judaism or they've been absorbed into the Arab tribes and no longer are distinct. All of the things said in this prophecy here happen along the historical path for the descendants of Esau. And Jacob and his descendants are right in the middle of all of that. Verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. Now think about this. How sad this is. These boys spent 9 months in the womb together. They're not identical twins, that's true. but they are still twins nonetheless. They grew up together. They were different personalities. But now that we've had this disruption of the relationship through this debate about inheritance and how deception was used here by Jacob in order to get this accomplished, their relationship is totally destroyed. And Esau now hates his brother with such passion that he wants him dead. Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching." Now remember, when this story first started, Yitzhak was convinced that he was on his last leg. Now he wasn't, but he thought he was. And so he was preparing to bless his son, his firstborn, and then die shortly after that. And then his son would take over. So Esau is now saying, it won't be too much longer. My dad will be dead. And once he's dead, I will kill Jacob and I will have my inheritance that he stole. I'll kill my brother Jacob. So this is premeditated murder that he is thinking about. And I would suggest to you, as we kind of get ready for our continued story tomorrow, that he probably talked to his wives about it. Remember, he's got two wives that he's married to. He probably vented and ranted and raged at the end of this day and for many days thereafter about what has been done to him and how he was cheated, how his own mother was involved in it, and his dad wouldn't do anything to help. And by golly, when dad is dead, I will kill Jacob and I'll take what's mine. And so I think his wives may have shared that information